Now, listening to music might be something you do all the time. On the radio when you're driving, watching a movie when that score starts to play. Maybe you've started seeing your favorite bands live in concert again, in person or online. Our next guests say all of these musical activities have a connection to our well-being, and they say music can be a big force for good as we grow older. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What connection does music have to your life? Is there a song, a band, an album that makes you feel better when you listen to it? How's your relationship with music changed throughout your life? Do you play music? Do you think it has some kind of a therapeutic value for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dean Vondras is a professor of psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and Scott Mady is an emeritus professor of psychology at Shippensburg University. They're the authors of the new book, Music, Wellness, and Aging, Defining, Directing, and Celebrating Life. There's an accompanying a YouTube series of play-along music you can listen to as well. Dean, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
And Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, Scott, I think a lot of us may know we like music and might make us feel a little happier. This connection to health, though, especially as we age, before we get into some of the details about how that works, how big a deal can music be when it comes to healthy aging?
It can be quite a big deal. I think it helps us in a number of ways when it comes to our health. Not only gives us an emotional release, it helps our moods. It also motivates us to engage in behaviors. We see that in exercise behavior and a whole host of things. It also connects us to other people that can also be a support network for us.
And Dean, we'll talk mostly about music, but I want to talk a little about aging, because one point that keeps coming out through your book is sometimes we think of aging as a pathology, a series of illnesses and declines and things like that. And you were, I think, really trying to make us think about it in a different way as a life change that we can adapt to in better or worse ways. Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, music tells a story about life, and we see it as a window to look into what's going on in adulthood, what's going on in later life. So it reveals to us, music does, aspects about ourselves in particular ways that we don't often maybe recognize or reflect upon, and it sort of directs our focus now on aging, our concern about getting older and what later life is, to onto those things. And so music becomes a special window to for us, allows us to look at aging in a humanistic way. And I think in that sense, we can take advantage of what it means to be a person at midlife or in later adulthood, how we're becoming yet, how we can see old age beyond the idea or framework of biological decline, to see it as still an experience, an opportunity for new growth, new understanding of self, new experiences in life.
Scott, can you talk some about the connection between music and memory in particular?
Well, memories, yes, simply put, is quite complex. But one way we can think of music and memory is how it helps us in terms of our, if we play music, how we can remember the pieces we play, how we learn an instrument. When it comes to our listening, how does music spark emotions, memories for past events, and those types of things? We certainly have areas of the brain, of course, that have been shown to reflect memory stores. And so, we have implicit memories, for instance, that allows us to play an instrument. When we use an explicit memory, if we're trying to learn a piece of music or actually playing the music, we have what's called a musical memory area of the brain that basically seems to be somewhat the last bastion of memory systems for music when we have experienced things like dementia. So it's been found to be its own kind of storage place for music. So all of these are related to memory, and then certainly we can talk more about how we can improve our memories for music, like if we're practicing, for instance, like common things like chunking and block practices versus random practicing and phrasing of musical phrases and, you know, starting slow with strategies.
Well, Dean, I want to stick with memory. I'm doing an experiment on myself in some ways. I just sorted through my CD collection. I stopped buying CDs many years ago. As I listen to things, it's this window into my life then. How much does the music we listen to at different ages help us, maybe as we grow older, connect to that past self of ours?
Good question. Well, keep buying the CDs, keep listening to
I stream new stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, and there's so much, if you like experimental music, new music, new kinds of music, I think it starts to allow us to think again about life experiences, if you will, and connect that way. So music is invigorating in lots of ways. Certainly cognitively, it sort of opens up our thinking a little bit more, if you will, allows us to make those kinds of connections. And I think if you're thinking about the yourself in development and considering how you heard the music at an earlier time in life and how you hear it now, maybe there's a new interpretation for you. You can hear an old song and think of it in a new way. Maybe a song you didn't recognize or like very much now is a favorite song for you. I think, you know, as we think about other kinds of music from throughout the world and different sorts of genre, we can, you know, take advantage of trying out some of these new sounds and seeing ourselves maybe within that cultural setting. That's, I think, an opportunity to, you know, expand and grow in kind of a cognitive, psychological way, perhaps, making new connections like that. But also, I think, in terms of how we see ourselves in the broader sphere of what the world is to us as we get older. When we're younger, as adolescents and young adults, we're probably pretty egocentric. Everything's about us, and we're filtering it through our particular lens. But at midlife and in old age, the new adventure is to see ourselves in this collective, cross-cultural way, to see the commonalities we share with people from all different kinds of backgrounds. And I think that can take us into lots of new kinds of reflections about how we are and who we are. So those old CDs, those old songs, I think reflect our history, reflect our past, were part of our milestones in growing up. And I think we can cherish those and celebrate those still in later life.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Kaukauna. Michael, hi.
Hi. An artist that spans many genres who just brings a joy to my heart every time I hear him sing is Van Morrison. Just something about doesn't have the best voice in the world, but he moves through it and just everything. He scats all, everything I've ever heard from his, it just made me smile.
Michael, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Dean, a phrase you used, brings joy to my heart. Could you talk about the solace, the joy that music can offer, which is a big part of our well-being?
Yeah, music has this quality. It has this effect. It's a phenomena that embraces us. We're immersed in that sound. It's almost like the music has the same qualities of wonderful and beautiful voices, as the caller mentioned, that somehow, you know, pierce through and touch us at our most inner point. And since ancient times, this has been recognized that this particular sound, a particular timbre of an instrument or a person's voice just seemed to elicit from us certain kinds of feelings of happiness, joy, comfort even, to add to all those positive kinds of emotions that we might express. But I think, you know, there's something to that, that as we age, especially get older and have this opportunity to reflect, to say, you know, what I'm hearing, I can hear in a new way, too. When I was younger, didn't have a great love for the fourth grade band, which plays in unison usually and out of tune, and it sounds very interesting. But now, as in later in life, I'm thinking that's one of the most beautiful sounds and beautiful symbolisms of what we do as a community, the teacher hoping for the students to do their best, the students following that instruction so carefully and trying their best. And at that moment, I think that is a beautiful music, too. So even, you know, you don't have to play all the right notes, but it's what we do collectively to, you know, communicate. Music's a language that tells us about ourselves, and we can speak about our culture, our social circumstance, about our hopes, about our love. So all kinds of things. I mentioned positive concerns, but, you know, there are all other aspects of our emotions, too, that we find also represented musically.
Talking to Scott Mady and Dean Vondras. They're the authors, co-authors of the new book, Music, Wellness, and Aging, Defining, Directing, and Celebrating Life. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find that music has an impact, a benefit for your emotional well-being, your mental health, maybe even your physical well-being? Do you lean on music when you exercise, when you need a boost in your mood, or somebody to commiserate with you in the bad mood? I've been listening to that new Adele album a lot lately, for example. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you broke up, I recommend it. Or you could post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our discussion about the role of music in all stages of our lives, especially as we age. Our guests are Dean Vondras from UW Green Bay, Scott Mady from Shippensburg University. They're authors of the new book, Music, Wellness, and Aging, Defining, Directing, and Celebrating Life. You can call in with your thoughts on what music means to you, what benefits it has to you, the joy it brings, maybe the healthier emotional and mental well-being along with it. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Mike is with us in Milwaukee. Mike, hi.
Hey, Dean and Scott, right?
That's right, yeah.
Hey, great. I remembered. I'm a senior citizen in my upper 60s, and I have just so much enjoyed your presentation on the radio today. I plan to get your book and read it. I have never learned to play a musical instrument, but I think I'm going to try that. I'm a big lover of music. Anyhow, I thank you so much for your presentation. I wanted to make one comment.
Sure.
That's kind of funny, where you had mentioned opening your mind to new genres of music, right? And recently, I discovered this, I think it's called EDM, electronic dance music.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, I never really listened to that. I just didn't, you know, I never went to a rave or took ecstasy or any of that. But I stream it on my Bose headphones while I'm doing housework. And it is just amazing how much housework I can get done.
I love it.
It's kind of like it matches a certain vibration, or it just communicates to me well, where I get into action and before you know it, the house is clean.
Mike, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, drum and bass DJ sets on YouTube have gotten me through the pandemic. A search Delta Heavy, Mike, on a DJ set on YouTube. I think you will be rewarded. So I love that that Mike is discovering new music. Dean, he opened himself up to a whole new genre. I don't know. I feel like our brains are growing as we discover new music.
Oh, there's so much music to listen to, electronic music. What's not to love about that? The excitement, the rhythmic pulse. It's, you know, one of the neurological things that occurs is the, you know, coalescence of the tempo of the music with neuroelectrical activity of the brain that starts to get things in sync. So in our book, we discuss this phenomena. And, you know, there's a song by Kiki D Band called I've Got the Music in Me. So it gives us a whole new understanding what's going on as we listen to music, how it really, you know, penetrates into us. It overtakes our own neurological kinds of functions and starts to move us in a particular way. we think, at least from that kind of neurological evidence. So I think there's lots there to consider. And again, all kinds of music. And, you know, if you're not, haven't played a musical instrument before, just listening to music, I think, is something that anybody can do, and everybody can do that. But playing simple, picking a simple instrument, if you tap your foot, keep beat somehow as you listen to music, you're already a drummer. So maybe we're all born drummers to begin with. So I think there's all kinds of access points for people to find to become involved in music, and listening and appreciating and going to concerts and talking about it are ways to become involved in that social experience that music affords us.
Yeah, and Scott, Mike had mentioned he's thinking of learning a new instrument in his late 60s, I think he said. I think a lot of people would say, oh, no way, it's too late for me. We could still get a lot out of learning an instrument at any age, right?
Yeah, yes, correct. Yeah, just to borrow a phrase, just do it. and as Dean mentioned, sometimes, a simpler instrument is a good place to start. A recorder, a little drum pad. But, start listening to music. And by doing that, listen to what maybe strikes you, that you find a particular instrument that you find interesting to hear. And that may be the one that you want to gravitate toward to learn. There's no prescription. There's no formula to pick up an instrument. I think any of us that played an instrument do look back and say, "How did I pick that up? And how did I stick with it?" So I don't think there's really any sort of thing you can tell someone, is just do it, I guess, is what I would say.
Thanks again for that call. Good luck with the musical instrument learning. We're talking to Scott Mady and Dean Vondras, co-authors of the new book, Music, Wellness, and Aging. Back to your calls now. Matt is with us in Green Bay. Matt, hi.
Hey, I have autism.
Uh-huh.
I love 80s music.
Do you have a favorite, Matt?
Usually I like Aha.
Okay.
I usually like Dua Lipa.
And I got to ask, Matt, did you grow up in the 80s, or did you discover it even though you're younger than that?
I'm 13 years old.
13. Okay. Yeah, this is, Matt, I'll point you in a direction. Find Gary Newman from the 1980s, and he's still doing music now, and it's still good. Matt, thank you so much for sharing that. I love it. Dean, Matt sought out music from a previous generation. He said he's 13, he has autism, and he's getting a lot of benefit from the music that I'll admit I grew up with.
Yeah, it's interesting that we hear music, and maybe some of the best music is the older music from the 80s. And again, the particular orchestration, the style of music that speaks to us now, in the 21st century. So, my son is into music from the 90s. Now we're listening to music from the 60s and Woodstock era. So I don't know how far we'll go back. Scott plays music that goes back to the 20s and 30s, and so do I. And it's still great music. So why not play it? Why not listen to it? And to kind of, again, think about playing musical instruments, harmonica is a great instrument to pick up, and you can get the blues harmonica and always sound great, usually. Play along with the radio, play along with Spotify. So there's always all kinds of ways to be involved. I should mention, too, that joining a community choir, a community band, is kind of interesting. And Scott belongs to one in Pennsylvania. He actually is in a couple of different groups. But the director there that's interviewed for the book, he mentions that when we think about community music and how it's a point of access for folks, it's an open audition. Everybody can come. And the catchphrase that's used that I really like is, your best is good enough. There's always opportunity to learn. So everybody can be involved.
Thanks again for that call. Scott, we just have a couple minutes left now. We've covered some of this now, but what kind of things are you hoping people take away from this book when it comes to their relationship with music?
Well, I think, a couple of sort of my closing ideas are, play more, become involved with music. As we mentioned, pick up an old instrument if you haven't played in a while. Get out your vinyl records, get out your CDs, get out your old tape players if you still have something that can play them. Pick up a new instrument, as Mike said, or join a choir or a vocal group. So get involved in music that way. Listen to music. Hopefully the book will inspire people to do that. There's no matter where you live, there are free concerts, there are performances, local high schools, colleges, concerts in the park. So I think the book focuses on this sort of phenomenology, this experience we have with music, this joy and this transcendence, this movement beyond just our everyday lives to something special. And I think that's hopefully what people will take away from this book.
Well, we'll leave it there. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
And Dean, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
That was Scott Mady of Shippensburg University in Pennsylvania and Dean Vondras from UW-Green Bay. They're with us today to talk about their new book. It's called Music, Wellness, and Aging, Defining, Directing, and Celebrating Life. You can find a link to that at WPR.org/Central Time and look for that title, Music, Wellness, and Aging on YouTube if you'd like. They've got playlists that go along with a lot of the points they make along the way in the book. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, over the holidays, President Biden said the federal government can't solve COVID-19 by itself and that individual states need to take the lead. We'll look at what the federal, state, and local governments are doing and can do to help bring an end to the pandemic. First, the pandemic has created big challenges for parents over the last couple of years. We've talked on the show about the ways moms have seen an increase in their parenting workload, especially when school-age kids learned from home. New research here in Wisconsin finds big changes for dads, too. During the pandemic, dads reported taking on more child care than before, and because of widespread work-from-home policies, new dads got to spend more time at home with infants, whereas in normal times, fathers are often left out of the family leave equation. We're talking now about fatherhood during the pandemic, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. If you're a dad, how has the pandemic changed your role, if at all, as a parent? Did you spend more time with kids for one reason or another? What have you learned along the way? What have your biggest challenges been during the pandemic? Does it change the way you think about your work-life balance into the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Daryl Davidson is the director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. He's also the city's community engagement director. Daryl, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Daryl, the Fatherhood Initiative there in Milwaukee was around way before the pandemic. Can you talk just a little bit about the kind of work you do there?
Yes, the Fatherhood Initiative started in 2006 after much research on the benefits of parenting and how father engagement is essential to the well-being of a child and a child's development. And so the type of work that we do includes organizing collaborative efforts, including the Housing Authority, the Milwaukee Child Support Offices, Child Development Opportunities, different employment groups, different organizations that work with private sector as well as public sector to assist men and prioritize their health as well as their social well-being. And we gather together to make sure that we're able to find ways of assisting men no matter what those assistances are. So we're a comprehensive group.
So here we have the pandemic. Things changed in many households, of course, through focus groups, through the kinds of calls you and your partner agencies are getting. What kind of things have you been hearing from dads?
We know that fathers are finding ways of being creative now that they're at home more. Many of the fathers discovered that they didn't have enough of a work and balanced home life. So they found ways of making sure to get their children involved in home activities that were going to be essential and memorable, as well as making sure that they could do some things that would instill lifelong memories with those children. That included not only spending time together, but also assisting them with everyday routines and helping them with their schoolwork, since many of the school activities became virtual after the pandemic.
Now, there are a lot, of course, of negatives regarding the pandemic, but it seems like there have been some silver linings. Many of the dads you and others in Milwaukee heard from, even if they were at home for bad reasons, they're out of a job, short-term or long-term, they found, it sounds like, many of them, that they enjoyed having more time to spend with their kids.
They did. I know that, especially today, when fathers were finding ways of turning their identity into their work identity, the pandemic hit. All of a sudden, their identity began to shift. They had a much more active role in helping around the house. Everybody wasn't clear about which parent was going to be working and which parent was not going to be working as much. And what you discovered was the fathers developed an emotional absence when they were away from home that they didn't know that they had. And therefore, coming back home and getting to see not only the personalities of their children on a regular basis, but also seeing how their nurturing enhanced that relationship, they couldn't do without it. And now what we're seeing is some of the fathers who are going back into the workplace away from home are openly stating that they want to make commitments to find a balance between their home life and will not accept certain jobs that don't allow that.
What would you say to employers, yeah, who may be hearing this from dads who for the first time are saying, you know what, I need to leave some time for parenting?
The first thing that I let employers know is that the father's contribution is essential to the growth of a well-balanced child. And what we're also finding is that since the fathers want to prioritize this, that it does make sense to find a way to negotiate either time on the job or, if there's possible, have the father work more from home in the capacity that's going to assist the workplace. And also include that in advertising about the job. If there's marketing that says that we are a family-friendly workplace or we support the work that fathers do at home, we want those job opportunities to let them know that they are family-friendly.
Talking to Daryl Davidson, director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, also the city's community engagement director. We're talking about how fatherhood changed during the pandemic for many people. And you could join in maybe with your story as a dad or the dad in your family. Have you been able to spend more time at home? If you had to spend more time at home for good reasons or bad, what has it been like, if so, to spend more time with your kids? Does it make you want to change your work setup when things go back to normal in the future? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Daryl, you got a lot of calls from dads and moms, for that matter, asking for resources to help dads who are maybe in this position of spending more time with kids than they were used to. What were some of the biggest challenges that people were asking about?
The biggest challenges were the resources that were virtual, because many of the institutions and services that were available to us primarily were in person. And if they were often government institutions, they had closed their doors during the pandemic. We are seeing opportunities now, and if they contact organizations such as the National Fatherhood Initiative, or even take a look at us at the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, our number is 414-335-5859. We can assist with identifying virtual resources that are available to families. And keep in mind, even though we're the Fatherhood Initiative, we did receive more calls from mothers during this period because they were trying to identify efforts that existed to get the fathers more comfortable with their role at home, as well as mental health support for that changing family environment.
Are there opportunities pre-pandemic and now with the pandemic for dads to get together and talk about the things that they're doing that they like, the challenges that they're facing, and kind of help each other learn at the same time?
Yes. Yeah, so in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we do have a Real Men, Real Talk group that is together every second Monday of the month. We also have relationships with other organizations, parent organizations, and father-friendly organizations that have regular contact with each other. If you are a part of a fatherhood program, often they'll have services available where those groups get together. And there also exists a group where fathers who are older are able to mentor the younger fathers or the fathers-to-be in their parenting skills as well as what to know when they become a father.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mila is with us in Milwaukee. Mila, hi.
Hi. I'm just curious about the resources for parents, head of households who are dealing with mental health issues and their children's mental health issues. How do they deal with that? What kinds of resources are available? And do they use something called parent peer specialists? Thank you.
Mila, thanks a lot. Resources for parents and families dealing with mental health concerns, especially during the pandemic, Daryl.
So what we have are available services that are connected through the Milwaukee County Behavioral Health, and you can reach them by going online. But also, if your children are school-age children, you can talk to your school's counselor as well as the resources. Often they will have parent advocates at the school. We do have other resources for people who are about to become parents related to mental health. There is an African American Breastfeeding Association, for example, that exists in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So if there's prenatal concerns, this is for mothers and fathers. That service is available. They can be reached through their website as well as they have a Facebook page.
Mila, thanks for that question. We're talking to Daryl Davidson, City of Milwaukee's Community Engagement Director and Director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. We're talking about fatherhood during the pandemic, what has changed for better, for worse, the challenges, maybe the silver linings, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a dad, what changed for you during the pandemic? If you're a new dad, if you became a parent during the pandemic, how much stress, how much challenge did that add for you? Wherever you are listening, are there resources? Are there people to talk to help you deal with these changing times? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about fatherhood during the pandemic. Daryl Davidson is with us, director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a dad, did you find yourself spending more time at home with kids by choice or by necessity? What was that like? Were there benefits to that? What were some of the challenges you faced along the way? Call in now at 800-642-1234 with a story from your family. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, ideas@WPR.org. Daryl, this is a disease that hit Milwaukee hard. It hit Black Americans hard, in particular, higher death rates for them. Were there challenges just in sheer dealing with grief and loss for the communities you work with?
Absolutely. I mean, the pandemic has changed the future, and it's basically changed it forever. Millions of people across the country have left the workforce, and so many thousands dropped out, even as the school years began and the students were virtual. So there was a lot of concern about where is this income going to come from? And we also had the debate between which parent is going to go back to work more versus the other. There were relationships that existed before the pandemic where the parents may not have gotten along as well, and they needed more support in order to coordinate and prioritize the schedules of the children. So it did make sense in many cases that the parents, after prioritizing the children, they made the decision, I'm going to have to quit work. And that was not just the fathers, but also the mothers.
And what kind of opportunities or what kind of resources are there for people in that negotiation? It's an extra challenge, an extra bit of stress for a couple as they work through those kind of conversations.
That's true. In Milwaukee, there's a parenting network that has support for moms and dads in situations like that. And also through the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, we will do casework related to the father's situation, what's going on at home, and if they can identify that one of their goals is to attain a job through us, we can assist by working with many of our partner agencies. But also it does make sense to lean on the support systems that come from the mental health serving agencies. There's numerous ones in our state of Wisconsin. And the fact is, mental health is not discussed as much as it really should be. And there's an opportunity now to not only take a look at what the services are and have a better understanding, but also be clear that those mental health providers are extremely diverse. There is some one that understands each situation that exists out there, so they should not be ignored during this time.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Lauren is with us in Rhinelander. Lauren, hi.
Hi. I'm a parent educator up here in Rhinelander, and I was just going to point out that during the pandemic, we've had more fathers showing up to some of our group conversations and meetings that we have, which has been really, really nice, so that the fathers can learn from each other, but also see how, you know, the mothers interact with their kids. And family resource centers just in general are a great resource for families. So if you're somewhere in the state and you don't know where to turn to look for parenting classes, et cetera, if you just look for a local family resource center, they should be able to point you in the right direction.
And Lauren, did you find yourselves doing these kind of peer meetings online through a lot of this? And if so, is that something you might keep in the future, even when you don't have to make it more accessible?
Yes. So we're kind of now in between virtual and in-person. So some of our program is going back to in-person and some of the parenting classes remain virtual. And we have definitely had a good turnout from parents virtually because childcare is obviously an issue if you're having to leave home to do something like a parenting class. So we're kind of figuring that out at the minute. And I think we are going to be able to keep options open where we either provide childcare or we stick to virtual so that people can still show up.
Interesting, Lauren. Thanks so much for sharing that at 800-642-1234. Daryl, have you found that to be maybe an opportunity, offering those virtual meetings, as Lauren said, and making it easier for people if they can't find childcare?
Absolutely. And one thing that I'll have to share, we've had virtual meetings and virtual services provided. We had a large Milwaukee Fatherhood Summit where one of the days was done virtually and the fathers were in the cars with their children, on the couches in the living room with their children. So childcare was not an issue. The services were made available to them. And I respect where Lauren went with that because I know that there are many family-serving organizations that want to help fathers, but what's happening is they were not necessarily identifying that the fathers had a place in the organization. So the recommendation that I give is upfront, start saying, we have a space for fathers here, or we prioritize fathers also. And that makes the fathers not only feel welcome, but that also provides an avenue for the fathers to initiate the calls. It doesn't always have to be the moms that initiate the calls for these services.
Thanks for that call, Lauren, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Daryl Davidson with the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative, looking at the changing face of fatherhood during the pandemic. If you're a dad, you could initiate a call. Dads are shy out there today at 800-642-1234. If you want to let us know how fatherhood changed for you, if at all, 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Daryl, you participated in this presentation with a UW researcher, some folks working on these issues in Michigan. One thing you mentioned that struck me, dads reported, okay, we're seeing a lot of information about domestic violence prevention, which is important. We're not seeing as much information about positive parenting behaviors, about how to be good dads. Do you see that as, I don't know, an opportunity that to meet that need?
It is an opportunity. Part of the reason is because historically, if the fathers were considered to be the secondary parent, then it wasn't always discussed or even researched for this matter, how essential the father was to the child's life. But what is a point of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative is to focus on the quality of the father-child relationship, because that matters much more than the actual specific hours that they may have together. What are the children learning? Is the father representing himself in the best way possible? Is he showing a positive relationship between he and the child's mother? Those types of things go a long way with making a healthy, stable, emotionally stable child in the end. And the other thing that we're looking at is, what is the father's capacity not only for caregiving, but also the types of contribution that seem to be intangible, confidence. If the father is a confident person, if the father is looking after their health, then those are the types of things that are being passed on to the child.
You recently co-wrote an op-ed piece looking at family leave and saying, hey, there are some lessons here we're learning. If we're going to expand paid family leave, don't make it just about the moms. Can you talk more about that?
I can, because what we have noticed has been that the fathers are focused much more on the job after they've had enough experience with their child, and they know that their child is not only healthy, but their child is safe. And now they are not thinking about, well, where's my child going to get this type of nurturing, or is this a situation where we're going to be concerned about the family income? We want the family to be as stable and as emotionally attached as possible. And that emotional attachment is extremely important in the first few years of a child's life. You can't get those years back. So we're encouraging employers as well as fathers to make that a priority. They should know that the family focus at the beginning is going to ultimately make a healthy society in the end.
That's that takes us to where I wanted to start to wrap up on, Daryl, which is lessons learned here, things we could take from this mostly negative experience of the pandemic to talk about how things like the Fatherhood Initiative do their job in Milwaukee. What kind of things are you wanting to take out of this for the future?
Well, I want to make sure that the fathers have conversations and discussions that are more solutions focused. I mean, we were able to experience the pandemic and we saw so many challenges and hardships and hurdles. But the fact is, it was a great opportunity to show the children that the unknown can be navigated through. So if the parents and the fathers are the ones who are saying it's okay, we're going to find a way out of this situation, those are conversations that need to be had, especially if those fathers and those mothers are doing the problem solving together. Also, what we have to put out there is there are numerous services, behavioral health, energy assistance, supportive housing, workforce development. There's child support services. There's offender reentry services, child development screenings. Those are available if you talk to the services that are available that are in the community. And many people don't know about them, so we ask that you go to your resources and your different service providers. There's, hospitals have this information. So do social service agencies. So do your family serving agencies. We want you to go to them and talk.
In just our last half a minute or so, Daryl, can you offer a little Daryl is off the line. Thanks to Daryl Davidson. We'll leave it there then. Director of the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. He's also the City of Milwaukee's Community Engagement Director. He joins us today to talk about the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative and the ways that fatherhood has changed over the course of the pandemic. Still time for you to share your story. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. And of course, you can always tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know how, if at all, fatherhood changed for you over the last couple of years.